Blog Talk Radio.
Guess what? You did it. That's right. You tuned in to the Indigenous Caribbean Power Hour Activism Show. This is the very first show we're doing on Indigenous Caribbean Activism Show. And you know what that means, right? That's it. We got this. This is DJ Sana Cody. What's up? And this is our theme song.
Así que déjeme decirte. Así que déjeme mostrarte. Otra vez lo que estoy dejando. Otra vez la bocina así parando. Necesito mucho para la mente. Creo que lo ritmo duro pa' mi gente. Siento que siempre yo tengo suerte. Siento que siempre yo tengo suerte. Ay, yo que pao. Puedo ver quién en eso no me mao. En el fuerte lo cao, lo cao. Así que vienes como tan, tan, tan. Como chate tú no juegas, no juegas, no juegas, no juegas, no juegas. De chill. Super siente, soy el único, el único, el único, el único, el único, el único de pueblo de San Bernardino. La cosa es mi isla de Puerto Rico. Sofisticado, soy taíno. Recuperando lo que es mío. Lo que es mío. Diablo. El ritmo suena como hum, petón, 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 petón. El ritmo suena como hum, petón, 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 petón. El ritmo suena como. No soy virao, no muevo cuidado. Con tirao, no muevo cuidado.
Suerte de suerte el lambón. Tiene la última meta cayendo, soy chotazo como un roca suave como brisa de dono, no huita de mbow, dembow, dembow, dembow. Quítala la taína, no sota de mbow. Quítala africana, no sota de mbow. Todo está para adelante, no dice de que no. Yo, 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 hasta el con el solo, hasta el con mi flow. Ascendiendo a su vida, sumiste tu blow. Quito con mi corro, no sota de mbow.
Déjame decirte, así que déjame mostrarte, otra vez lo que estoy dejando, otra vez la bocina así parando.
Check that out, it's Luis Machete Rossi, Tectum, man, that's it, that's going to be our theme song right here in Taino Radio, always head to toe, we are strong as the Manatee Buffalo. Hey, man, I just got back from that Reto Rodeo today, man, that was good. Guess what, it's a good day to be Indigenous Taino. That's right, this is our very first show, Indigenous Caribbean Power Hour Activism Show. This show is going to be all about what are Taino people doing out there to make the case that we still exist. That's right. That's what it's about. The activism is about we are still here, alive and well. Christopher Columbus and the Goon Squad, they tried their best. They tried. They really did. They tried. It's called colonization. They're still trying. But Indigenous Caribbean Power Hour Activism Show is going to show the world that we are still here. And that's what it's all about. Hey, man, check this out. I have the first hostess of this show. It's going to be off the hook. That's right. And guess what? I'm looking through my crates here. And I'm trying to find a nice record. Yeah, I think I found a nice song here. Let's see. Man, I gotta have a good song for the hostess. That's right. She is of Taino and Mayan descent. She's from the mountains, both of Borinquen and Cuba. She's also from the mountains of El Salvador. That's right. I believe Columbus went out there and named it Salvador. But check this out, man. She is here. She is a social media activist warrior. That's right. That's right. We're taking over social media. So she gladly accepted the role as hostess of our first and many shows, Indigenous Caribbean Power Hour activism shows. So guess what? Once again, hailing from the mountains of Cuba, Borinquen, the freedom fighters of El Salvador, all those warriors who fought hard for all years for existence. That's right, and her name is Belly. Yo, Selena, can you hear me?
I can hear you. Malavika, everybody. Welcome to the Caribbean show. My name is Selena, and I am of Taino and Maya descent, and I'm very happy to be on the show today.
Wow, man, I'm excited, man. There we go. We got this, man. What do you think? We got this, right?
We've got this. It's going to be a very exciting show because we have a special guest, Joali Nicole, who also goes by Queen Machete, and she has a lot to bring to the table tonight.
I'm glad you said that because, you know, the topic of today that we'll be discussing is definitely about indigenous, the role of the indigenous woman in this traditional sense. You know, it's about being a teacher and also the maker of warriors. What do you think about that?
I agree with that 100%. Yes, and our women were the ones who were warriors, who led, you know. So I think this show and this topic is perfect to talk about tonight. It needs to be discussed.
Well, before we bring on our guests, I wanted to ask you, okay, so our audience could understand you a little better as the first hostess of Indigenous Caribbean Power Hour Activism Show. Well, tell us about you. Tell us
a little bit.
I know you come from the social media realm, which is so cool.
Right. Thank you.
Continue.
All right. So my name is Selena, and you might have seen me on TikTok. I'm under Taino Indigenous. And also on Instagram as Daka Taino, which means I am Taino. So TikTok is really where I'm mostly at. For me, TikTok started off as a creative outlet for me, but I started gaining a lot of followers, and then it became something much more. It became a safe space to bring awareness to the ever-growing Taino movement and to educate, and I found through that I was able to heal through the resurgence of the language and restoration of cultural practices and beliefs and colonizing our history. So it just became so much more. It became a space to heal and a space to talk about really hard issues. You know, I grew up, you know, in the early 90s, and we were told that Christopher Columbus and the Spanish, they killed off all the Native Americans prior to arriving in the Caribbean. And my abuela, she told me that that's not true, that we came from the mountains. She used the term Hebrew, but there's a little controversy on that term. But she said we came from the mountains and that it's still in our blood and we are still here. So, growing up, I would try to tell people that, and that would often leave me with this imposter syndrome-like feeling. So I decided enough's enough, and I thought, you know, I can't be the only person out there feeling this way, searching for answers. And then came a DNA study where it showed that 60% of Puerto Ricans have Native American DNA. And this is for the Caribbean here, so that was absolutely shocking. So I went ahead and did the DNA study as well, and I did my DNA, and to come to find out that I have ancestry in El Salvador, which was the area where the Mayas were, and in the Caribbean of Cuba and Boriquen, which is modern-day Cuba and Puerto Rico. So that was quite interesting. You know, I felt like I had an obligation, I had a duty to educate the people. You know, I really wanted to do ancestral work, and I really wanted to educate our new generations to come. You know, and that's right. With somebody. Yeah. So I decided maybe, you know, that person should be me. So it's been quite an experience.
No. I can't believe that. That's a powerful statement, man. That's powerful that you made that decision to go for that. But I think it started with, what was it, your mother that told you or your grandmother?
It was my grandmother.
That told you that...
And then, yeah, we were Taino, and she would actually use Taino words, which Canuco, which we know is a farming field. And I would do a little study into the words she would say, and then she would also say Gwei, as like an expression of pain or excitement. And I had never heard anyone else in the Spanish-speaking language say that before, so I did some digging, and I found that these words she was saying were indigenous Taino words. And I can't tell you how shocked I was to find that out. It's been such an incredible experience.
You see, she planted that seed.
Yes.
These are the women that plant that seed and develop warriors. So look at that. Look what she was
Thank
doing.
Thank you so much. She did during her time and her mother's time, talking about being indigenous wasn't a very safe thing to do or say. So there was a tight lid kept on that. So just for her to share a little bit of that and some of the ancestral foods, you know, that was very special to me, you know, and I'm going to teach my daughter that, and hopefully that will get passed down. So that was just a very special thing.
You know, that's what we call jewels, you know, like in our tradition where, oh, man. You know, before DNA came out and before, what's that company that they have the paper trail and stuff that the Mormons church had? I forget what you call that.
I think it's Ancestry DNA.
It was before Ancestry. I think the Family Search, whatever. That's what a lot of people were doing. We were running to the Mormon church on 58th Street, I believe, here in Manhattan, to try to get those documents. And this is before any of this. But I remember one of our elders used to say, no, you're wasting your time. Go search for the oldest member in your family that's still alive. They will know. Like, what, really? So that's what we did. We all searched for those members. It could be a great grandparent or this and that, and try to get that information. And there's always a story about some Indio, right? Oh, yeah, maybe it's our way like India, you know, and da da da.
Yes.
So, but it's kind of sad, right? What do you think about this? It's kind of sad that a lot of people still say that. Oh, yeah, my great grandmother was indigenous, but they don't equate it to their identity. They don't disconnect. Have you encountered that?
I have, actually, and I think a lot of that disconnect that people are feeling, that imposter syndrome, I think that lies in the history that we were taught that our people are extinct, you know, and using that word extinct is just super negative within itself, you know. You can go ahead and do a Google search on the Taino people, and every article, most articles you read, you see that they talk about us in past tense. So probably for most, like, how do I explain that I'm still here when everywhere I look, it talks about me as if I'm not still here, you know? And then there's the whole thing of blood quantum, which to me personally, I think blood quantum doesn't matter. I think it's a, you know, a colonial construct to divide. It's a form of racism if you think about it as well. So I think when people think of indigenous, they think of this certain type of qualifications, when it's not just that, it's merely existing. I've definitely felt that, and I know I'm not the only one out there. It's a real thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, the other day I was walking in the street in Washington Heights where I live, and I did a little video, and I'm going to post it on TikTok. It says, how do you know you live in a Taino neighborhood? And on the floor, I took a video of it. There was some pieces of yuca on the floor. Because, you know, I guess, you know, they sell yuca all the time. And it was like chunks of it on the floor, like garbage, you know. And says, mm-hmm. yeah, when you find Yuka on the street, you know you live in a Taino community. But unfortunately, a lot of people don't identify, but they live the life.
That's right. And, you know, Yuka is one of the main things that was part of our diet. You know, and yuca was very sacred. I was also told that before the women peeled the yuca, they would sing to it because it was believed that the yuca had a spirit. You know, before each plant was picked, you know, you had to pick it with a good intention. You had to sing to it, you know, kind of venerate the ancestors and the sami. So, yeah, yuca is mm-hmm. part of the Taino culture. There's many things. You think of the language we speak today, like English language, like the word for hammock. That originates from the Taino word hamaka, and barbecue,
that's right.
That originates from barbacoa. You even got the manatee. The manatee is a Taino word. That's for, you know, the mammal. You know, there's so many words that we speak and say that are in the English language, in the Taino language. How can one say that it doesn't exist anymore?
Yeah, you people know? Still... People still wanting, they want like the, what do they call it, silver bullet. I don't know, they're looking for that mystery of, really? Nah, I don't believe it. But, man, this is incredible that we can talk about these things in this kind of forum here in Taino Radio, social media, TikTok. I've seen a lot of your TikToks, they're really nice. You know, the picture that we got on the poster today, yeah, man, no problem. The picture I saw of you, I said, you know what, I got to dress traditional too, man. So we both dress traditional on the poster. That's kind of cool, though. But, you know, we got to represent, right? Sometimes we got to represent.
And that was a way for healing, too. I actually I did that on Indigenous Peoples Day because that day is very important. It's very important. And one thing I really wanted to stress to people is when you talk about Christopher Columbus, and you talk about the Spanish, you know, please don't forget to talk about the Taino. Please don't forget to center the focus around the Taino people, because the Taino people, our ancestors were directly affected by that. We were the first to be colonized, and then others thereafter. So I really wanted to stress that, and it was incredible to see the amount of Taino representation on TikTok, on Instagram, on Twitter. I mean, it made my heart so proud. You know, in that moment, I saw them, you know, because I'm a little bit older than most, I saw them as my children, as my family, just feeling so much love and so much pride in seeing them. So I know our ancestors are feeling the same way, that we're venerating them. So that
oh,
was
my God, that's what it's all about.
Yeah, it was such an awe experience. It was very powerful. So, yeah, I try to make
definitely.
A lot of videos. What started off as Creative Outlet just became something much more. When I get people to, you know, who send me DMs, they're like, hey, you know, I want to let you know that your profile, your page just completely changed my life. And when I read that, it just makes me want to cry because I just feel so grateful. You know, I'm thinking, like, how could I change someone's life like mm-hmm. that? So I can't stop. I got to keep doing it. I want it to be one point where everyone who is Taino can stand up and proudly say, I am Taino. You know, I want our native language to be the next language to be spoken, you know. I just want there to be no more fear in claiming who you are. I want the truth to be out there. You know, that's my goal,
wow.
for our people to heal.
That's it. Wow, you sound like a Indigenous Taino activist. That's great.
Thank you.
You know, I open up the chat board if anyone wants to chat through our website, blogtalkradio.com, /Guasavara1491. Guasavara means war or warrior. GUAZAB as in boy, ARA 1491. Taino Radio is about not starting physical or violent wars, but it's about declaring war against ignorance, racism, and all that ugly stuff, right?
Right.
So I opened up the chat if anyone wants to chat in. Later on, before we leave, if anyone wants to call in, it's 515-602-9999. 5156029792. That's 515-602-9792. Hey, man, we got a guest straight out of Borinquen. That's right, man, from my home island of Borinquen. And we got a beautiful guest. Come on in. You are on the air. Wait a minute. Hold on. Yo, who let those cookies in the studio? Wait a minute. Hold on. That's not our guest. Wait a minute. Well, while we have them on, let me ask them one question. Cookie, wait, I didn't ask the question yet. I think they're excited for the show. So, Cookie, one question. What do you think about the show so far? What do you think, Selena? I think they like the show.
I think they like the show, too.
Oh, man, that's good. All right, Cookie, muchas gracias por estar aquí. Thank you for being here. Okay. All right, here we go. Well, check it out. Our next guest, as you mentioned earlier, she's presently living in Borinquen, and I know she goes to sleep with those beautiful coquis. And please introduce our next second guest. You were the first guest, Selena, technically. And now you're the hostess. But who is our second guest here in Taino Radio? Who is she?
We have Joali Nicole, who also goes by Queen Machete on social media. She is an Afro-Indigenous woman with familial roots in Borinquen and Quiqueya. And she has a lot to talk about today.
Wait a second. Is that Queen Machete? That's what you just said?
Yes.
Did you just say that? Wait a minute. You know what that means?
Así que déjeme decirte, así que déjeme mostrarte, otra vez lo que estoy dejando, otra vez la...
That's right, that's the husband, that's Luis Machete Rossi, and are you there, Nicole? Can you hear us?
I am. Hello, thank you so much for having me here.
Oh, that's big. Wait, I call you Nicole. It's Joali. What am I saying? Hey, hold on.
It's Joali. A lot of people call me Nicole just because they can't pronounce Joali, but you can. So you can call me Joali.
That's one. Joali, there you go. Man, I'm excited, man. Selena, what do you got, man? What do you got for Joali? I'm excited. I'm just going to chill here, look through my records here, and I'm all ears.
All right. Well, Joali, thank you so much for joining Taino Radio. We're so very happy to have you today. So first of all, I just want to say thank you so much for having some time to spend with us.
Absolutely. Thank you. I am honored. It is a dream come true to be sharing the stage with people that are on the forefront of the revival of our people and doing the most important work that there is out there to live. Okay, Tainos just need to live and exist because
yes.
Our existence has been up for debate, apparently. But here we are living as an act of defiance. So I am absolutely honored to be here. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. And speaking of activists, you are one yourself. Do you mind telling everybody who's listening today a little bit about your background and how you got started?
Absolutely. So... for me, I was born in Rio Piedras, Puerto Rico in the late 80s. I was raised in California, in both Northern and Southern California. And my mother is Dominican. My biological father is Puerto Rican. And my stepdad is actually American. He's white American. With that being said, I still grew up very adjacent to California natives, both in the Mount Shasta area when I was young, and in Southern California, the Inland Empire, east of L.A. My closest, dearest friends that have saved my life are the Payomkawish people of Eastern Riverside County. And I got involved and reconnected to my native roots through my friendships with some of the most amazing women that I've ever met in my life. And the validation I received from them when I took on the academic task of proving that the Taíno are not extinct. There was a few opportunities during college when I did supplemental instruction for a world civilization course. I did not like the way we were talked about in the books. And when given the opportunity to do my projects for the class, I wrote a paper back in 2009 titled "We Are Not Extinct, Evidence of Taíno Survival in Quisqueya." I focused on Quisqueya specifically just for the scope of that initial paper. After that, I did a special course where all I did for the entire semester was work on this paper under the tutelage of Professor Vargas at Mount San Jacinto College over there in the Temecula area, which is the native land of my friends that had taken me in and really, really helped me reconnect. So ever since then, and this was before the popularization of DNA, and this was before the kind of new revival of Taínos. I feel like now it's much more, you know, people were recognized in a way that we were not before. And I was kind of standing alone. I felt very alone besides my friends who are California natives rooting me on the entire way. But in terms of, you know, even in my family, my own mother would be like, oh, well, the Taínos are extinct, you know, because that's what we were taught. So I always had that rebellious spirit that there's no way that we're extinct when the food we eat is Taíno, our accent is Taíno. The words we say are Taíno. The island, my last name is Cuba. That's a Taíno word.
Yes.
Like, we're not extinct. So in the beginning days, for me, which was the late 2000s, Columbus Day was still in full effect. There wasn't like this, you know, push back against Columbus. I stood alone in the streets of San Bernardino, California, protesting outside the university by myself against Columbus. And I'm pretty outspoken. Like, I'm pretty outspoken when I protest things. So the things that I said about Columbus were pretty barraging because I have zero respect for him. And I started there. I started with my crusade against Columbus after I wrote the paper and really abolishing Columbus Day and calling for the abolition of Columbus Day because he opened the transatlantic slave trade and committed genocide against the Taíno people. And was found guilty of such while he was alive. That's what people don't understand, is this man was so atrocious that he was found guilty back then for the crimes he did against my people. And one of the things that upset me is as the movement gained momentum over the years, I believe around 2012 is when the city of Seattle officially abolished Columbus Day, the face of the anti-Columbus movement was not a Taíno face. And I was really upset about that. I felt like we were being erased again. They were using North American and even sometimes Canadian tribes to be the face of the anti-Columbus movement. And with all due respect, we all suffered at the hands of colonialism. But my people specifically suffered at the hands of Columbus. And when exactly what you said earlier, this needs to center around the atrocities that have been committed against the Taíno people. And Quisqueya especially, because that's where he was. And not the only place he was, but that's where it mostly happened, in Borinquen. So that became a passion of mine of, you know, we're not just going to – you're not going to say that we don't count as Native American because we're Taíno, but then push this anti-Columbus movement and not include my people. So then it became about that. And then I was asked.
Can I just add something? Can I just add something there? you know, the full reality too is there's still a lot of Northern American natives, Canadian, South American. They think we're extinct. They also think we're extinct.
They do.
This is the,
they do. Because of
you
the
know, they're learning
genocide.
A lot. They're learning a lot now thanks to people like you all, you know, but, you know, on social media and stuff like that. But I'm telling you, that's you just hit the core right there. That's the pink elephant in the room. Wow.
She did.
You got it.
She really did.
Oh,
she
wait,
did.
I should say the pink manatee. The pink
yeah.
manatee in the room. Look
the manatee.
At that.
Joe Ali, you hit it right on the nail. I mean, you really
there
did.
There you go.
And these are hard conversations to talk about. And my response to when you said you stood alone, because a lot of times you did, especially during that time, you know, my response to that is it's easy to stand with the crowd, okay? But it takes courage to stand alone. You know, you have to be brave and stand for what you believe in, even if you stand alone, even if the popular belief isn't that, you know? I mean, if you look throughout history, we had many people who stood alone. Malcolm X, you know, mm-hmm. Martin Luther King. We had many people who stood alone to fight for rights, you know, fight for their people. And, you know, you are a true definition of a Guaribo. You are a warrior.
Thank you.
I just wanted to put that in. I just wanted to say that, you know, because we are, I mean, you know, I know everybody else probably listening, we are so grateful to have somebody fight for us like you have and like you continue to do. You know, for that, I just want to personally thank you so much for using your voice, for standing alone, even when you probably, at times, you wish you had others to stand with you. You know, you standing alone, you created this movement that we have now. Like, young people like me, you know, we're like, continuing what you initially started. So for that, you know, I commend you, and I have the utmost respect.
Thank you.
For you. So thank you so much.
I am so, that is so touching. It takes.
Definitely.
My after a few years, my focus changed a bit just because of how traumatic Indigenous activism is.
Yes.
It is very traumatic. It is very heavy. So my activism became more, rather than pounding the pavement and cussing, because I cuss, okay? I'm not, like, well-mannered when I'm protesting, okay?
As you should.
In your face and angry and not I'm fully uncouth, okay, and say it with no regrets because I don't need to be well-mannered when I'm talking about the genocide of my people. Somebody else can. I'm not the one.
Exactly.
Personally. But it became more of a livity. So I did a land stewardship with my partner, Luis. We've been together since we were kids. Or early 20s, kids to me. We were about 21 when we got together. And we lived with the California natives and learned so much about being a native and not centering it around performance. Because
right.
so much is like, okay, I'm in full regalia, look at me, I'm so native, I'm standing by a tree. But actually serving the land and serving the people and understanding Native culture. Now, the California Natives have a different culture than ours. But in a way, and I was talking to Luis today about it, the Taino had to catch on fire. We lit ourselves on fire as a torch, as a message to all Indigenous people, that these people are not gods, don't get it twisted, when they come your way, and run for the hills. And by the time they got to California, some of those people knew. Oh no, we're not fucking with them. Sorry if I'm not allowed to cuss. We're not
no,
dealing
you're
with them.
Fine.
Like we're not.
Say
okay,
what you feel.
Yeah, we're not dealing with them, and they were able to preserve their culture. Now we all are victims. They fell victim to the mission system and slavery, and we're still finding out what they did in boarding schools. But Tainos were sent to boarding schools too.
Exactly.
Tainos were sent to boarding schools as well. But and there's that connection from us here in the East in the Caribbean all the way to California. And kind of like building that trust between Indigenous people because they nurtured us. They nurtured us on land that was their ancestral land. And because of that, we were able to build a bridge to come to our ancestral land, which is here in Borinquen. And I am life is not easier in Puerto Rico. I'm not here on vacation. It's not piña coladas and, you know, turning up at the club. It is understanding the colonialism, the fact that this is a colony today, and my people have less rights today. And Puerto Ricans are Taino. All of us are Taino. Like, it's not like, oh, that Puerto Rican is Taino. We're all Taino. Listen to a Puerto Rican person talk and tell me that accent is not a Taino accent.
Cuidao,
words like that. That is the A-O at the end of our words is a Taino accent. So Tainos have had a huge influence on American culture. In addition to the words that you mentioned, the words mangrove, tobacco, canoe, hurricane, all of these are Taino words. I have ventured to see if there are other indigenous people who have so many words in the English lexicon, and I have yet to discover it. I have yet to discover another tribe that has influenced the English language as much as we have. And I'm up for correction. So if anybody knows, this is a study I do want to do linguistically to prove that the Tainos are not only not extinct, but were highly influential to American culture, therefore the world. So that's where I am today. I'm here back on my land. And because I was helped by other indigenous people to get where I need to be, to make sure that my tax dollars, my blood, sweat, and tears, my money, my life, my livity contributes to other Tainos. That's why I'm here. I want to build a bridge so other people can come home, because it's going to take us bringing our warriors home to defend our land, because the power that you get when you stand on this earth, that's what I learned from the Payomkawis. That's why they're so empowered. They're on their land. And
that
I want to be on my land.
That
so
is everything
everybody
just...
come home. It's a homecoming.
Hey, Selena. It sounds very much like what Arayeke Yukayek has been talking about, right? What do you think
it
about
does.
That?
It does. One thing, there were several statements that I took, what Joel Ali said, just because she talks so passionately. You know, this is in her heart, you know. One thing she said, I want to build a bridge for our people to cross. I mean, wow. I mean, that statement itself is so powerful. I'm, like, taken aback from that. That is exactly what Arayeke Yukayek is about. That is what the Taino movement should be about, that we have this bridge built that our people can cross, you know, that we can come together as Taino people. And, I mean, another thing for you, Joali, what is it like living on your ancestral lands? I can't imagine, the emotions you probably feel.
It's incredible. For the first time in my life, because I'm Afro-Indigenous. So I am African, and I am Indigenous.
Yes.
In America, in California, I'm not recognized for what I am at all. I mean, I speak Spanish. Spanish was my first language.
Mm-hmm.
And I was surrounded by Mexicans. But Mexicans did not recognize me as a Latina or as a fellow Spanish speaker. My name was never pronounced correctly by anybody around me. My Latinidad was not recognized. So my indigenous ancestry was for sure not recognized. And that imposter syndrome goes deep, right? That imposter syndrome goes deep. It wasn't until I had that DNA that was like, okay, well, you know, I'm not some girl at Coachella wearing a headdress. You know what I mean? This is really in me, and there's a reason that 500 years later, you know, we're being awakened. But so being there, I was chronically misrepresented and misinterpreted. And the way people saw me was not what they received. They saw me and expected an African-American person with African-American culture. And when I opened my mouth to speak, and when they saw my culture and my mom and my family, that's not what they got, because I'm Dominican and Puerto Rican, you know, and the culture is distinctly different. And in California, there are no Puerto Ricans. The Puerto Ricans we got is J-Lo. Like, that's it, you know. Nobody knows what it is. I in high school, I couldn't even say I was Dominican, because people, I mean, I've always been Dominican, But I said Puerto Rican as a default because they at least knew what Puerto Rican was. People didn't even know what Dominican was. It was a different time. Not everybody had a smartphone in their hand, you know, because I'm 33. I know. So it was different. It was before social media. So moving to my ancestral land for the first time in my life, I don't experience racism. I didn't grow up in New York. I didn't grow up in even L.A. I didn't grow up in a place that was devoid of racism. I've always been othered in every aspect of my existence. I've never been able to blend in, ever, ever. I've always stood out in any demographic I was included in. So being here, people say my name beautifully. I hated my name growing up because it was always butchered, and nobody knew how to say it. And here I'm falling in love with my own name because people say it so beautifully. Here, my family, nobody questions us. Nobody asks me what I'm mixed with. Nobody questions if me and Lewis are an interracial couple when we're both Puerto Rican. You know what I mean? It's just that alone, just being able to exist without being othered is worth its weight in gold. That's why everybody has so much power, right? That's why the domineering culture in America has so much power, because they're not othered. And when you are, you're immediately outcast. When I'm here, the power comes immediately, as soon as you hit the earth, because you look around and you see yourself. I had never seen old ladies that looked like me besides my mom. Imagine going your whole life and not seeing yourself, because I didn't grow up in the Bronx where my neighbors are Puerto Rican. You know, I didn't grow up seeing old ladies that are brown skin with curly hair that speak Spanish. Never seen it besides my mom. And my mom has straight hair. She doesn't even have curly hair. She's brown, but she's got straight hair. So here I get to this neighborhood, and there's old ladies in their 60s and 70s that look like me, have my kind of hair, have my kind of body, and are speaking Spanish. I'd never in my life seen that. So if I was empowered before, because I was, I've always been an outspoken person, my power and my conviction has been has grown exponentially here, because Puerto Ricans aren't judgmental. Like, it's not like America. Like, yes, I stick out here because my accent is Mexican, because I'm from California. So there are some words that I say that sound very Mexican or Mesoamerican. Yeah. But they don't treat me badly because of that. They encourage us, you know, learning Spanish and learning the words, because Puerto Rican Spanish is like one of the hardest dialects to learn, because it doesn't even sound like regular Spanish. Why? Because it's Taino.
Exactly.
It was swallowed by the Taino in African languages. That's why it doesn't even sound. The cadence of our language is Taino. So being back on my ancestral land, even today, Lewis took us to the top of a mountain, past Utuado, and we're in a cloud, and I'm looking in the distance, and I'm saying, we absolutely did survive. You think the Spanish came over here and knew what the fuck to do with these mountains? No, thank you, ma'am. We hid there for 100 years, and nobody bought, for 500 years, and they're still there. We're still there. Yes. We have no reason to come down. So when you go up to these mountains and you see your people living as they always have, then there's no power like that. That's why representation matters.
Yes.
Because if you have a child that grows up and never sees themselves, never sees, you know, an older version of themselves, or never sees themselves as a president, or never sees themselves in professional positions, or this, that, the third, they won't see themselves that way. So me coming back here and seeing Afro-Indigenous people, mestizo people, people that are, like, honestly, you know, they want to say, you know, 50% Taino. There are still people that are out there like that. But they're not giving their DNA to Ancestry.com.
Yeah.
But we're still here.
Exactly.
You know, so it has been absolutely empowering. Now, at the same time, just by changing my address to Puerto Rico, I lost rights as an American. I lost representation in the government. My people do not have food sovereignty. my people do not have representation, but we are taxed without representation. My people do not have a say in what goes on, and we are experiencing generational trauma time and time again. So I took up that trauma as well. When I go to the grocery store and can't afford food, when healthy food is more expensive than you could even think. And Puerto Ricans who live on the most lush island are eating food that we just should not be eating because of colonialism. So on one hand, absolutely empowered. And on the other hand, disenfranchised by the American government even more so than I was when I was in America. So more upset about those things and can't ignore it.
Joely, I have something to add on that. When I lived in Corozal for 4 months, the first people I made friends with were the people, you know, who typically are called, I'm going blank here. Tecanos? You know, like the people, addicted on drugs and whatever. So, I was raised in East New York. I'm from the hood here in Washington Heights. So what I found was these were the people that were kind of like, I don't want to get into the whole substance abuse thing, but they were like the lost souls, you know, like that the society didn't really want to care about or think about. And, you know, I started chatting with them, whatever. We started chilling, you know, whatever, by Burger King, and it became cool, you know. I don't take drugs. I don't chill like that. But they were hearing me out, and then little by little, they recognized me as El Indio. And believe it or not, they show so much respect for Taino culture, the people on the streets, you know. And I honor that. But guess what happened?
One day
I was walking to Burger King. Yeah, they do, right? And so one day I was going to Burger King. It was really hot. I had no electricity. And I went to Burger King. I was open till 2 in the morning, whatever. And I saw one of the guys. He was all strung out. I believe it was heroin. He was all messed up. And so I reached out to him and says, "Brother, you need some help, man. I can help you, you know. Let me help you, whatever." He says, you might be ODing here. And he's like, in Spanish, you know, "Ah, man, hermano, olvídate de mí. Yo no sirvo para nada. You know, forget about me. I'm not worth anything." He says, "Nah, brother, vamos, hermano. So he gets up and he walks. We were literally maybe half a mile from the clinic, from the health clinic. So we're walking dead night. You know, in Borinquen, you know, you don't walk at night like that, right? So we're chilling. You know, I'm trying to get him sober up, give him some water, you know, whatever, trying to get him back into reality. And then we showed up at the ER. It was closed. It was no ER. Then I said, "Wait a minute, there must be another hospital here." And he told me, you know, there is one on the cross town, whatever. I said, "All right, let's go there." It was closed. So finally we found someone. I said, "Yo, we need a hospital." He said, "Well, you can't find one here." I'm like, "What?" And then I was told we had to go to Bayamón, which was like 30 minutes away in car.
And I've been to that. And I'm like, exactly what hospital.
Right. So then the guy looks at me and he goes, "I told you they don't care about us." And he's just like, "And Milo, wait up, hold on." And he just like disappeared in the night. It was something out of a movie, man. And I'm like, "Yo, what's up with this? This is bad." And then a couple of days later, I posted this on Facebook. I found two ambulances, right, covered with weeds. Like literally the forest was covering these ambulances. I guess at one point they had ambulances that, you know, picked people up. Then I found out that all these hospitals are privatized. Like, come on, man. Like, what's going on here? So I just wanted to add that, like, yo, this is sick.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
it's bad.
So, right?
Yeah, that's actually, you know, hearing that just it absolutely breaks my heart. And I think some of that, you know, is part of the intergenerational grief and trauma, you know. You know, that topic's probably for another day, but, yeah, it's sad to see our people, you know, like that. It's heartbreaking. And
I just want to add something. Okay. I bumped into him later on, like a couple of days later on the street again. And guess what he asked me? Never guess. I'll say it in Spanish. Maybe it sounds better. He says, hermano, tú eres indio, ¿verdad? I'm like, sí. Mira, necesito un empobo, por favor. Sácate el diablo de mí. Los indios saben serlo. So he says, listen, you're Indian. I was like, yeah. He says, only the Indian can take out his demons from me. Please take them out. So that was my first kind of ceremonial, you know, Borinquen kind of, you know, no feathers, no regalia, just straight up like, yeah. I'm praying for you, man. That just like blew me away.
Exactly.
And this is what our people need, man. They're looking for it.
Exactly.
Yeah. And it's, you know, grateful that there's people like you and Joe Alley and so many that are willing to give an open hand to help our people, you know. And just going back to what Joe Alley, what you were saying, you know, like about how you're living in Borinquen and you can't afford food. A lot of people can't afford food. And I know there's the whole thing where there's barely, you know, electricity. My abuela went through that living there. You know, that's why I fight so much for independence for our land, and that's why I fight so much for sovereignty,
right.
Food sovereignty, you know. We need to, our people need to come together, you know, to govern us. You know, we just, that's why I really fight for independence, you know, because a lot of people, the people who live in Borinquen, they don't get the same rights as those in the United States, you know.
You know,
Borinquen is just considered a territory. You know, and if you read the book War Against All Puerto Ricans, which is a book I highly recommend to all Boricuas, anybody who is Taino descent, you know, from the Bahamas, Cuba, Haiti, Jamaica, you know, everywhere, Dominican Republic, you know, to read that book, you know, because it's very important. But everything you said, yeah, I agree. That's just, it's shocking.
It is. It's shocking, and it's nuanced because, yes, give us our independence.
Yes.
Haiti got their independence. How did that work out for them? Okay.
Yes.
So I think it's a very nuanced conversation because it's like, say you adopt a kid like they did, but you, while that kid is living with you, you cut off their arms and legs and then you're like, okay, you're independent. If they drop independence on us like that right now without reparations, without rebuilding, without equity for what they have done with us, we're like a kid that was adopted but now is a paraplegic. Because it's not like if the United States is off our back, the next day, oh, now we govern ourselves, we have all the resources. We have no agricultural infrastructure. We have no food sovereignty. How are Puerto Ricans going to do that? So I think even the sovereignty and the independence conversation, because we're a territory, is a territory just a sanitizing the fact that we're a colony?
Yeah. You know, and I feel like,
go ahead.
I just, you know, I feel like most of us were indoctored to this belief that, you know, Borinquen, Puerto Rico would collapse if we gained independence, but we're currently collapsing right now as a U.S. Mm-hmm. colony, as a territory, you know, so I just.
Definitely.
That is true. It is true, but. I guess my thoughts on that, especially with, I don't know that it will happen in this generation, maybe my daughter's generation. Somebody will come up with a platform and be like, we must set the people of Puerto Rico free. And it'll be a whole platform, and they'll set us free, and they'll wash their hands of us. And it's not that we'll collapse, but we need reparations. Like, they can't,
exactly.
I don't think they can just walk away with hands clean, look how noble I am. My platform was to set the Puerto Ricans free, and look what I did. No,
exactly.
Thank you, ma'am. We're going to need everything you took. We're going to need the bones of our ancestors out of your museum. We're going to need all the wealth you collected from us from the last 500 years. We need a check, a severance check. So I'm not going to let them off scot-free. And I'm not going to let anybody virtue signal about setting the Puerto Rican people free and then, you know, watching us. Oh, see, they were better off when we were there. Because, of course, when you take us off the titty and we have no skill and no infrastructure of our own because they systematically disenfranchise us to not have it for generations.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, so I guess my point is yes, sovereignty for my people, but I'm not going to applaud them dropping us like a hot potato and washing their hands clean and say that that is what's going to be okay when we have been pillaged and robbed for half a millennia. Don't get it twisted. I'm going to need you to run me my money. Like, don't play with me.
I am so, grateful we have someone like
I'm not playing with that because somebody will. Somebody will because you know the virtue signaling of TikTok. You see it every day.
Yep.
And the holier than thou, oh, we shall. I believe in that. Okay, okay. But we need money too. Don't play with us. We need infrastructure too. You need to build us up on your way out and then leave. Or just run us a check every year for the rest of eternity as well. Either way, you're not going to wash your hands clean of this, and I'm not going to applaud nobody for setting the Puerto Rican people free when we should have been free the day we were born.
Yes, yes. We need our reparations.
We do. We do. Oh. And our reparations don't come in the same way that Black Americans do, so it's not at all to co-opt that conversation. We have our own land, okay? So it's not at all to co-opt that version of reparations, but it's our own equity for the wealth that we have provided. North America, not only financially, but culturally, they owe us some money. So nobody gets to like come up in 30 years and be like, my whole platform is if I'm elected president, I will set Puerto Rico free and everybody's going to clap their hands and then have no plan for Puerto Rico.
Right.
So I want to make sure that when that time comes, we can strike immediately and we have the mobilization. We have brought our people home. We have brought our people home and our people are here in order to do what needs to be done after that. Because, yes, Haiti got their independence. Ask them how that's going for them. Why? Because America doesn't just let people or the Western culture doesn't just let people have things. Okay? Even though Haiti was the second and the second one to write the Declaration of Independence modeled after ours. And the only slave revolution on the history of the planet, and those were Taínos, okay? The only slave revolution on the history of the planet to be successful, yet they are the poorest country in the world. Of course it is. Yeah. They don't just let people have nice things. Haiti doesn't get the recognition it deserves. And then people say, well, look at Haiti's corrupt government. Why do you think that is?
Yeah, I agree.
So I know that's a whole different conversation, but I wanted to mention that because I don't want the conversation to move forward with, oh, we just need sovereignty, just leave us alone. When that's not the solution. We need to bring our people home. We need to build our infrastructure. We need to make sure that whatever severance we do with the United States is equitable to our people, and that we're not bringing our children into a world where they have nothing.
Exactly. You know, we want better for our kids, and, you know, it's not just easy to say we need sovereignty, that's that. There's more that goes to it, you know. So, yeah, everything you said, I agree 100% with you, especially for someone who's currently living in the ancestral lands, you know. But, yeah, thank you, Josie.
Well, can I just add something here on the tribal side? I know Arayeke Yukayek, which is the sponsor of Taino Radio. You know, this is a public service we offer the Taino community. One of the key things we're fighting for is land, you know, purchasing land and creating a government. Hold on a second. It's creating a land that's, creating a government. I mean, not a government. What am I talking about? Creating a community that's not a nonprofit, that's not politically based, but is ancestrally based. You know, like our ancestors, and we got to play the game because we need that cash to buy the land, right? But we need to secure that land. And I'm telling you, according to U.S. law of reparations, I know personally museums will give the sacred beings back. They call them artifacts; they're beings for us. They will give them back, but who are they going to give them to? You know, I know nonprofit organizations are fighting for that. But they're waiting. A lot of the institutions are waiting for a legitimate tribe to rise up and say, here we are. And we got the land. Panchito, Cacique Panchito from Cuba, he received, for the first time since, 500 years, Smithsonian Museum gave him or his community the bones of a Cuban indigenous ancestor. And the reason why they gave it to his community, because they are a community. They're living, breathing Taino community that never stopped.
Mm-hmm.
They just became more active and more involved in the national stage because of the many Taino members that went out there. You know, Taino people that went out there and it brought exposure to them. But they did a whole reburial ceremony and everything. So that's the blueprint right there. We need the land.
Yes, it is.
We need the people to manage the land.
And we need the community.
The land. And we need the community, right. So that's what we're doing now. Now that we're trying to get that land. And I think right now, first time ever, I think, the U.S. is a little friendly to that because of the Department of Interior has a Native woman, you know, in power. And now that Biden did, the President Biden did this whole thing with the Indigenous Peoples Day. You know, it's a small step. So
but,
as Taino people,
time.
Wow, this is it. This is the time to do it, you know. And I know a lot of
time.
Europeans, you know, I was talking to Juan Gonzalez over there in Sidra, who was the caretaker of a sacred land out there. And he was telling me about some land up for sale. And he says, man, I got some bad news. Someone bought some of the land I wanted you to get. I'm like, wow, what was that? He says, an Englishman from England came. And he bought up a bunch of acres of land. So, you know, people are dying, man, for us to come back. You know, those ancient traditions. So I think it's important, man, that we... The blueprints are there. You know, our ancestors were highly organized people.
Yes.
And the blueprints are there, man. We just have to revise it to 21st century and stuff. But, you know, historians will tell you our Taino political structure was either equal or more organized than the Aztec nation, you know, the Andean nations. We were very organized. And they couldn't find a slave force. We had the Naborias. So, I don't know, man. This is something that we need to discuss more as a people, right?
Right. Yeah, and, like, that's what...
Tribal sovereignty.
Yeah, and decolonizing our history, too, because on TikTok, I get some people who write not very nice things. I was responding to them, but I got banned, so, you know, now I just either delete them or put them, but... I was getting a lot of comments just saying, oh, you lost the war, it's your fault you lost the land, and it's just like how the Europeans wrote about us. They wrote that we were weak, and that's not true at all. You know,
that's not true.
Yeah, they wrote that we were just savages, which isn't true either. They wrote, like, all these things are untrue, so I feel like, you know, someone like Joali or, you know, other activists, it's like time to decolonize our history, tell the true history. That's important
as well. That's it. But, you know, there also the reality in the Indigenous Caribbean, I mean, or I should say the Caribbean in general, is there's so much hate towards El Indio. That's another part that we have to look at. There's a lot of education needs to be done. There's a lot of romance around the Indian, you know, but there's also a lot of hate. Oh, my God, it's really bad. It's still bad now. So, you know, we're still seen as, you know, creators of witchcraft. And, you know, when you go to Dominican Republic even, there's a town there called San Juan Amaguana. I don't know if you heard of it. They practice a spiritualism that's connected to the 21 divisions in spiritualism in the island. And the water division is the Native American division, the Indio. And that's mostly practiced in San Juan Amaguana. And whenever you ask people about San Juan de Maguana, what do they tell you? Oh, I don't even know brujos. That's where the witches live. You know? Well, actually, when you go there, those are the bejiques. Those are the ones that are actually doing the medicine cures. They're actually, they'll tell you we're communing with the caciques, the chiefs, the old chiefs. And it's powerful when you see stuff going on there in San Juan de Maguana, but it's seen as witchcraft. No, witches on brooms.
In my world,
so
witchcraft isn't a bad word.
Yeah.
Was that?
In my world, witchcraft isn't a bad thing. So Witchcraft is just what they call things that aren't Christian. And so it's not, that's part of the decolonization is are our native ancestral practices, were they deemed witchcraft by who and why? And what does witchcraft mean? And why is, you know, are, if you're sick and you take onion and honey and lime, that is an ancestral cure. That's witchcraft, okay? People don't want to say that, like, lighting a candle, that's witchcraft. Like, that's a whole nother conversation too, but these words, these buzzwords that they use to describe us only have a negative connotation because they gave it a negative connotation.
Exactly.
Not because anything we're doing is negative. What's negative about using natural resources to heal people? What's negative about honoring the land in which you live? Like, we don't have an imperialist colonial mentality towards our own land and people. That's not us. That's the Spanish brought that in. The Portuguese brought that in. They're the ones under that Christian enslavement and oppression. I rebuke that. Personally, like, that doesn't apply to me. So if you tell me there's a city in DR that's witchcraft, on my way, I'll go to see my people.
Yeah,
because
it was right there. San Juan,
they're the ones that have preserved what our people did.
Yeah, there's actually a stone there that the people protect, and there's generations of women in this family that actually purified the stone every morning. They use coffee and water to purify the stone. And they say it's the stone where Cacica Anacaona used to sit and talk.
Yes.
That's where she used to sit. So that's something that's not made up. You know, that was her region.
No.
So
yeah.
She used to sit in that stone. So to this day, what, 529 years later, they still revering this stone where she sat, and people look at that and they laugh and want to honor it. So we have to band together. That's the key. We all have to connect with these folks, right? And that's why, Joanie, that's why you're doing a great job going back to the island. You know, I try to go back. I mentioned this to you, Joanie. I try to go back. Who's that?
Oh, no, I was saying she's doing the ancestral work, that's for sure. Like, the ancestors work through her. It's incredible.
Yeah. You know, and I always remember my time there in Corozal, those 4 months that I was there. I couldn't get my license, my social work license. I went to the Department of the State Department, and they refused because of a technicality. And I pleaded with them. They gave me an opportunity to plead my case. I don't know, it was crazy. I don't know if you ever been to Old San Juan. You can't get parking there. It's impossible to get parking. And I had a car, and I found parking the day of my hearing. But so I felt like that was my day. I'm going to win this case. And they just, you know, they just wouldn't approve it. So I kind of felt kind of dejected, rejected. It's just the system is set up to make people fail. But you know what? We have to band together as a community, as a tribe, tribal, right? As a Yucayic.
We do. Yeah.
It's the only way, the numbers is the only way we can do this, through numbers. Not
we're
one
still
person,
here.
Two people,
we're,
three people. Mm-hmm.
We're
yeah.
not extinct. And I couldn't do it without, you know, I'm Queen Machete, but I couldn't do it without Luis Machete Rossi. I couldn't be here. I'm a woman. I have a daughter.
Right.
I would have to care for my child on my own. If I didn't have his protection and his guidance and his commitment, you know, like today saying, get up, we're going to the mountains, we need to go ground, you know, I'm not the one. I wouldn't go drive all the way up there. I'm terrified to drive. Have you ever driven in Puerto Rico? Yeah, you said you drove. It's crazy here. Red lights are an option.
Man.
So I couldn't even get around here if it wasn't for him. So there's definitely not only that, but just him. He's an activist as well. He really lights the flame in our family to and gives me the protection that I need to say the words that I say, because it's dangerous. The things I say aren't safe. I'm banned from things all the time, girl. I feel you. I'm getting banned from TikTok. I'm going to be banned. I already know. But especially as a woman, to be an activist and to be brave, to be out here saying things that piss people off, that aren't nice to the status quo. And I have I personally have no intention of being nice. Why can I do that? Because I have the protection of a man that's going to keep me safe at all costs. You know what I mean? So not every woman has that, but I do want to honor and shout out my man for all of his indigenous work and activism as well. That is on his is music and serving the land itself and getting us out into the land. Where I'm more of a keyboard warrior, you know, than he is. He's not a keyboard warrior. He's not fighting nobody on Facebook. That's what I do. But that, you know, it takes us all, is my point. Yeah, it takes two, and we're a couple, and we're going to help anybody else. So anybody who's listening, get in contact with me if you want to come back home. We want to build that bridge as a family. We want to show people that, you know, you don't have to drop everything and move, because that's a commitment. It is hard to live in Puerto Rico. You know, I make my money online, so, and I have a community that supports me till the end. And I'm able to do it. I'm able to do it and survive. I know that not everybody could drop everything and do that, because Puerto Ricans have less rights than Americans. There's less opportunities. We're poorer than Mississippi.
That's right.
We have less stuff. So not every, you know, I'm not going to romanticize, just come here and everything will be fine. No, but at least come on vacation, at least come for a week, at least come for a month and feel that power. Look in the faces of people that are your people that never left the land.
Yes.
And come spend your money here. You know what I mean? Come contribute and know that you, whatever Puerto Rican person, oh, your grandma was Puerto Rican. Yes, you. You're Taino. Yes, you. Yes, you are a survivor. Because they wanted to erase us. That was their whole point. They wanted to erase us, and they couldn't, and we survived, and we continue to survive and thrive. And you know that Puerto Ricans are still, and Dominicans and Cubans and our Taino brothers in the Bahamas and in Jamaica and all over the place. You can hear it in our music. You can hear it. You can taste it in our food. That we're not going anywhere. Not only are we not extinct, we're not going anywhere. We're not going to be extinct anytime soon. And there's an awakening going on. Selena, you were awoken around the same time. We're both on fighting the same cause. Why? Because everybody's being called back from the diaspora. 500 years later, where our ancestors are rising up, because it is time. Now we have the microphone is in our hands. And if everybody's having a conversation about Columbus Day and they're doing that across the world, then everybody's thinking about the Taino. All that energy is coming to us. We're going to sop that up like a sponge. Thank you very much. Pass me the mic. I got some things to say. And it takes all of us, because not everybody can be out there cussing everybody out like me. You know, some people got to tend to the land. Some people got to cook the food. Some people have to be more diplomatic than I am going to be. We need all of us, every Puerto Rican, every Cuban, every Dominican. Look into your history. Like you said, look into the oldest member of your family. So many of our grandmothers were healers. Yeah. So many of our great-grandparents still wore their hair in the way, and you can see the indigenous features in their face. And even African people of African descent, whether you're Afro-Taino or African-American, still indigenous.
Yes.
We try to erase our indigenous roots there too. Who benefits from the erasure of indigenous people? This is capitalism. If we're dead and we're silent, then they can take over our land. But our land is our ancestors. So that's why caring for the land and not forgetting to connect to the earth and protect the earth. And that's why climate change and land-based politics and things that protect the earth are very important as well, because that is indigenous work as well.
Yes.
So I'm just so thankful to be privileged enough to be able to come back home. I was born here, and I was called back home. And I just dropped everything. We came with two suitcases, and we live in an empty house in Soa Baja. You can hear the echo. But it was worth it to me, and I'd do it again. Because my ancestors knocked on my door and said, come on home, and here I am.
Yes, yes.
And I don't know what's going to happen next. I didn't know I was going to be on Taino Radio within 2 months of being here. But to
there
me, this is a torch on my spiritual journey. This is a reminder that I'm on the right path, because now I'm connected to two people on the forefront, and we all became that much more powerful just by
exactly.
this conversation. And everybody who's listening, to feel empowered. And if you're not Taino, then how can you help? You can amplify our voices. Let everybody
mm-hmm.
know that we're still here and we're not going anywhere.
Exactly.
No.
God, that's so powerful. That is powerful.
Yeah. You know, ladies, I have a story to share with you about a woman that lived in Borinquen, and I don't want her history to be forgotten. And her name is Dr. Yare Melendez. She died this past year in January. And I don't know if you guys ever heard of her, Yare Melendez. But
I have.
You have? Okay. Well, we were very good friends, and I was like an apprentice of hers. And I'll try to learn as much as I could from her as a Mexique, as an activist. And in 2006, let me go back a little bit to go forward. But in 2006, she took me to let me backtrack. In 2006, Nahuake community, which was her community, they were given land, okay? They were given land to live as an indigenous community. And she shied away from the word Taino community because she didn't want to exclude the other mixes in our people, in our culture, in Boricua culture. And she just wanted the kids to choose that. She didn't want to force it on them. Let them choose. Let the people choose. So when she got this land from the Populares in 2006, she got the Jibaro people, the farmers. She got the abuelas, and she got everyone involved. And they actually built a bate, the sacred part, over a modern, an ancient bate. They rebuilt it. And since she was an anthropologist, she was able to get archaeologists involved and so on. And they got blueprints together. And they actually revived an ancient bate, which was Cacique on Guaraca at the time, during the invasion time. And what happened was they had an organic farm, and they had schools for the children. They were learning the language and everything. And then in 2007, a year later, the PNP, which is the Republican Party now in Puerto Rico, who are in power now, they gave her eviction papers. Oh, you have to relocate. Oh, you have to leave. This is not your land anymore. And so they went into, damage control, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't even want to have public hearings, and they forced the public hearings, the community did. An SOS was sent to all Taino people. No one came. I didn't hear about it. Somehow the information was suppressed, and that's kind of a sad part of our Taino history in the modern days, that a lot of that SOS was not received. And I saw emails that went to the UN. I saw emails that went to different people. It just died. So they lost the land. They were forced. It was the first legitimate indigenous community in Puerto Rico that was destroyed by a modern government, a U.S. government. And there was no outcry. There was no testimonies to this. So I went in 2018, and I visited the site. It's a garbage dump now. This garbage dump is over Bate. It's over a burial ground. So she died, but I believe the work still needs to continue. And we have
yeah.
to work as a community. And what failed at the time was that the Taino community were not unified. There was no unity. And sometimes it upsets me that people are quick to go to powwows, or they're quick to do these gigs, and regalia and this and that, but are really slow about stepping up and saying, yo, this is our land, man. Enough is enough. And helping one another. So it's time that we become active, like, at that level.
It is.
It's about the land, you know. It's about the land. It's about the land.
And, yes, and in 2006, there wasn't social media. There's social media
right
now. We have followings now. You know what I mean? So they,
yep,
they'll still try to silence us, but it won't be as effective as it was back then. So I don't think
yeah
we should give up. I don't think we should
no,
give
no
up. I think land back all the way. You know what I mean? That applies to us too.
Mm-hmm.
We need our land back too. And we have followings and we can unite. And it's really easy to get like to get lost in like the little details, like, well, these people believe this like different thing and these people are over here. We can fight about that later after we have what we need. We need to unify under
right
common goal, and
that's
that
right
is the continued survival and prosperity of our people, so that when my daughter grows up and says, I'm Thaina, nobody questions her about it. Like, no questions asked. Okay, cool. We know what that is. We know exactly who your people are and the sacrifices that they made for this world.
Yeah.
And
you're right.
Land back applies to us too. And now we have following. So in 2006, and I mean, even now, I'm sure you noticed, Selena, on TikTok, how much people were talking about the Thaina this past Columbus Day.
Right.
More than
that's
I've
right
ever
they
seen
were. Yep.
So we
it
need
was
to capitalize.
Yeah. Yes. I mean,
it's
and
our time
what
to do this.
And everything you are doing, you know, Joelle, for your daughter and for the future generations, I mean, you are absolutely an activist. And just to people out there, you don't have to have a huge following or anything like that to be an activist. If you see something that you notice is wrong, you change it and you act on it. The act of changing it is activism. You're changing something
yes
that needs to be changed. So anybody can. You know, like you were saying earlier, like, we need a community. We need unity. Absolutely. I 100% agree with everything you said today. Absolutely. And I know I'm grateful. We're grateful just to have an ally, to have, you know, one of us fighting so hard and who has been fighting, even when you stood alone. You still did it, you know. And I just have the utmost respect for you. It's incredible.
Thank
you're
you
incredible. You're welcome. I mean, I really mean
I look
that
forward to I look forward to continuing to work together. This isn't going to be
yes
the last time we collaborate. You know, this is
exactly
this day is going to go down in history.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
It's the full
that's
moon,
right.
So this is
right
a very important day. You know, our people were lunar, did practice lunar synchronicity. Full moons and new moons were really important to our people. I don't think there is any coincidence that we are on the full moon right now tonight. So the words that we're saying hold a lot of power. And a lot of people will be activated just by listening to this conversation and inspired
and
by the fact that
I feel activated just listening to you the whole time, especially when you were talking. I just had goosebumps. I mean, I'm not cold. The room is perfect temperature. I just had you gave me goosebumps. You know, it's just like
definitely
it's
the power.
It's powerful. I mean, I'm just at a loss of words right now, just with everything you said. You know, it's been a while since I've been left speechless. That's just how powerful you are. It's incredible.
Thank you for having
you know
me. Thank you for having this platform.
Yeah, you too.
No doubt.
You.
Bomatum, thank you. Hey, check it out. I just want to throw out some numbers, okay? If we get 1,550 Thainos, right, and if each person or family donates $100, that equals $155,000, which will buy land right now. Today, I was given some information about some land right by a sacred site in the island that will purchase that land, 25 acres, $150,000. But if 1,550 people gather as one, don't need 100, we got it, man. We got that.
So
we
got to
start crunching those numbers. We got to crunch those numbers, man.
We can do that. I can commit to helping with that. Like, seriously? Like, if we're serious about that? I have an active community, and it's not even all Taino people. There are people, there are other indigenous people. We have allies that aren't Taino that would help make that happen. Because there are people that believe in us.
That's it. That's it. And what better way is to be on the land, and those that can't be on the land can visit the land, support the land, right? And keep it going for our future, right?
Yes.
So Selena, after this, you gotta speak. You guys gotta speak, all right? Let's talk about planning with through Arayeke Yukayeke, okay? And for all you people listening, for all you people listening out there, Wataino, you know, even if you're part of Yukayeke, it's all right. We're all one people. You know, we're all one.
That's
it's
right.
Not about class structure, right? Or this and that.
Arayeke Yukayeke is literally a nation that is composed of families who are, you know, who just kind of come together. And I know, at least with, you know, Cacique and you guys help honor and foster our traditions. You know, you try to help us become the best versions of ourselves. You know, you do a lot of healing in the group. That's what made me join. I just feel so at home. And as you know, a lot of us are genetically related. So that's like a bonus too.
Oh, man, that's the thing that's crazy. Joali, the people that have done the DNA, we're all like related in the group, in the village. So,
what do you mean they were deleted?
Huh?
What do you mean?
With the DNA's results, you know, we can compare the DNA to these different companies. We're all matched. Like, we all match as cousins. Most of us.
Oh, we're all related. I thought you said deleted.
What? Oh, no. Relations, right.
Another paper genocide. No. Lewis was talking to me about that today. He said that we're probably related.
It would not surprise me. Yes. Like, the way you are, Joali, you remind me a lot of, like, the powerful woman we have in our group. You know, I would not surprise me if we were genetically related. But even if we're not, we're still family, you know? All in the Caribbean. We all went through this. Our ancestors did. And I know, like you said, this conversation happened for a reason. We were led to this radio group for a reason. I really believe it's the work through the ancestors. It's just incredible.
No,
like, I have goosebumps throughout this whole talk today. And that's never happened to me before.
Well,
I do too.
That's it. Well,
I feel
very
connected and very supported. So thank you so much.
Good. You know,
that's
you are
great.
Supported. And I think Sana Kori and I agree. We would love to have you on the show more often because I know there was so much that you wanted to talk about. And I would love if you could continue. You know, talking about that.
Anytime.
Need to know. And you're also educating me, you know, because I'm still learning. I'm still really young. And, you know, you've had experience since, what, the 80s? You know, so I just think we could all learn so much from you. You have a lot to offer. You and Luis. You guys
Thank you so much. Anything we can do, we're here for it.
Awesome. You guys are amazing.
We're in it to win it. We're in it to win it. Well, you know...
Our existence is a resistance.
Yes.
That's right. What's that? Say that again.
Oh, our existence is the resistance. You know? It is. Our ancestors willed for us to live.
Wait.
So many ran to the mountain. They protected us. They wanted us to continue living on. You know? And go ahead.
Wait. That's a good title of a song.
Is it?
No, I'm just bugging here. What's up?
I know it.
but say it again, Selena. What happened?
You want me to say it again?
From the mountains. No, but you know, we have to continue this fight. Activism is not easy.
Right. It's not.
You gotta be
active. Through this, you're going to lose a lot of people, but those people weren't even in your corner to begin with. You know?
Exactly.
If you know, prepare to lose things, prepare to sacrifice things, but it's for the greater good, especially as Joelle and Santa Coria, especially as you both know, because you guys have been in this longer than I have. You know, I'm still relatively new. You guys understand what it's like. You know, that's just why I'm so grateful. You know, even though I'm a hostess, I'm so grateful just to, you know, talk to you guys. It's incredible.
Well, you know, Dr. Yaire Melendez, she always used to preach about how do you know you're part of a tribe? Well, how do you know you are a tribe? She always used to say, well, give me your latitude and longitude. Give me that, and I know you're a tribe. See, every city, every town, every nation, they have latitude and longitude. So we need the land, man. We need the land.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. It's over. We got to do this. It's the next frontier,
all
right?
About the land. Yes.
Right.
And we'll get it.
Huh?
$150,000 isn't going to stop the Taino Nation.
That's right.
That's it, man. It's there. It's ready for sale, man. But we need a solid community. Well, we need a solid
mm-hmm.
community first of individuals who are, you know, who are honest people, respectful, responsible.
Yes.
That you know, this is what our ancestors always taught, and the women formed the men to be warriors to defend this cause, right?
Yes, yes.
Both of you are living examples. Yep. Did you guys ever read that, what was it? It was an article many years ago about why the Homo sapien kind of destroyed the Neanderthals. You guys read that? They say they came up with some studies that, right? What was the conclusion, your studies on that? Like why the Neanderthals were probably stronger and had more endurance and stuff, but why did they lose out?
What I learned in anthropology was that, this may not be related to the article, but this is just what I actually learned in class. They had like their frontal, like the front of their brain was like smaller because of the food that they ate. And because we ate a different type of food, like we were able to cook our food, our brains grew bigger. And we just were, because you can even look at like the Neanderthal skull shape and the Homo sapiens skull shape, we had higher intelligence than the Neanderthals. And I don't know exactly what point you were making. I could have derailed that. Wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah.
I didn't even know that, so I just learned something new.
I didn't know that. Well, according to the studies, what kind of like leads to that conclusion is that Homo sapien was able to domesticize the culture. So they were able to learn how to make clothing for the winters.
Yes.
They learned how to cook. And this was led by the women. The men hunted, the women organized. So that's what kept that's what kept everything tight. Is the family unit. It's the woman was able to organize family. That's the key. Those is, you know, goes way back, right? Way back. Those old traditions.
That's the basis of all civilization. It's the basis of all civilization. They found the first calendar on the walls of a cave, and 28 days were marked out. And, you know, they discovered that, like, why, you know, the first makers of calendars were women tracking our own cycles. And that's how calendars came, you know. So women, I could talk for ages about my pro-woman stance and women being the backbone of civilization. That's a whole nother activism.
Well,
but it's adjacent to indigenous.
Well, that's what I'm getting at.
It's adjacent.
That needs to be talked about. That needs to be talked about for sure.
It does. Yeah. And especially it's the whole basis of how civilization was developed. And women don't get enough credit for anything.
That's it.
So
yeah,
that is another marginalization.
One powerful weapon at the time, the ancient weapon that they found in one of the caves was the chancleta.
The fossil of the chancleta.
The Homo sapien managed to develop the slipper that they could use as a weapon. Oh, man, that's messed up. What's that? Chancleta.
Goes way back.
It could take an eyeball out.
My ancestral right to wield the chancleta.
That's it, man.
It was a fossilized one. The first woman, the first person to be beat with one. I'm here for it.
It changed society. It changed society as we know it.
I'm sure it did. Somebody found out that day. The first, you know, God bless the first woman to wield that chancleta and put somebody in their place. She set the bar for all of us.
Oh, man, that's well, you know, it's the respect, right? You know, but if you break it down, that the art of the chancleta is not a matter of hitting someone with the chancleta, but as a child, you see it coming out, you stop what you're doing. You're like, all right, so
the threat.
It's like a reinforcement.
Yeah. No, but my mom's Dominican, so I was hit with the chancleta. I'm not like a modern day child.
Yeah,
felt victim to the actual. Yeah. I know kids nowadays aren't spanked. I come from previous times when children were actually struck with the chancleta met the skin.
Yep.
It actually did. So.
Well,
now it's a figure. Well, now it's a symbol. But there was a time. There was a time.
But you know, I don't know where I read this. I think it was the De La Casas who wrote those three huge volumes of books on our ancestors. But I remember he said, wow, I just realized something. All right. So basically he had mentioned that the invaders had an issue with our ancestors disciplining children. Can you make a guess what it was? What was the biggest criticism?
We probably didn't discipline them the way they did.
Mm-hmm.
Like they were probably violent and gross to their kids. And we probably were more civilized, if it was my guess.
Yeah, they were very annoyed that we would teach our children that the cuco existed. True story, that they would use myths and stories to teach the children how to behave. So we went and hit, but we, you know, el cuco, that mystical creature, right, that will eat you if you don't behave. So they were annoyed by that, and we were annoyed that they would hit the children. So interesting, right? Cultural clash. So
well, then
so
I can
ladies,
say that my mom beat me as an act of colonialism. I will use that against her.
There you go.
I'll be like, go back to the ways of our ancestors and just threaten me with spirits, Mom.
Yeah.
And I tell you, I don't care who you are, if you tell a kid about a cuco, they're going to behave.
That is true.
Yo, I want to challenge.
If people don't know, would you be able to explain that a little bit, the background behind that story? Yes.
Well, just a mythical creature that was similar to Bigfoot almost, that would eat the child or take them away from the family if they misbehave. It was something that was recorded by the invader historians.
Wow.
And it caused a problem. Yeah, it was like, you know, like a Bigfoot kind of creature, el cuco. El cuco te va a coger. The cuco's going to get you. And it's still done to this day. And I like to challenge any Boricua, any Dominican. In Dominican Republic, they call it Ciguapa. I want to challenge them right now, tonight, before you go to sleep, shut all the lights. And I dare you to put your feet under the bed and just wait. And I want to see if you're not scared.
It's a full moon. Be careful. We're really close to Halloween.
call the cuco's name. Cuco, come get me. And put your feet under the bed.
I don't recommend that. Anybody who's my people are impressionable. I don't recommend that. Don't do that. Y'all, just don't. He's joking.
That's a whole different intergenerational trauma, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't call the cuckoo on the full moon in October. We're good.
You see? Because cuckoo exists. All right, man. Well,
yes.
Listen, we're way over time. Can you believe that? We're having so much fun here. We can be all night long,
yes.
man.
I feel like we could. We could just talk all night long. That's just, it felt so
natural. We have
to
do it again.
We do. Yes, we do. Because you had a lot of great things that need to be talked about. And you, a lot of the things you're talking about are hard conversations, but they need to be had. So I would love if you come on Thyeno Radio again. Just because I know
yes,
you have
just let
so
me know.
Much. Yeah.
Definitely.
You have so much.
Definitely.
And I'm here.
Yep. Oh.
Yep.
How can I forget? The women were also very strong. They were very strong. You know why? You know, the ajeritos lasted 4 days. Singing, dancing, the Mexicans will give the old traditions through stories, through dance, right? They usually lasted four nights, right? But according to the Spaniards, I don't know how true this is, but, you know, the men used to wear these ponytails, right? They used to wear these ponytails on the crown of the head, and they will drink all night long the yuca, chicha, the yuca drink, beverage. And an amavi. So according to the Spaniards, they will get so drunk that they will pass out, and the women will have to drag the men from their ponytails. I don't know if this is true. I'm trying to get the source. But that makes sense, though, right?
Yeah.
But on a serious note, you know, addictions and alcoholism is rampant in many of the men and women. So there's something that we gotta. This is another thing we have to. We have to address as activists, right?
Right.
The whole.
What was once a spiritual drink became a way of coping for our people shortly after European invasion. That's something I was gonna talk about in my next. We're just talking about generational trauma. For people who don't know, Mavi is a tree bark-based beverage grown, and it's widely consumed in the Caribbean. And also, there's different ways it can be made, but it was traditionally a fermented beverage made in, like, small batches. I know at least in Philly, there's a few local vendors. I believe it's, like, Fifth Street that they sell them. Just because my family and stuff, they after they left Boricán, they went to Philly. So.
Yeah. Well, in Washington Heights, you get it right there in the streets. They sell it around the streets, the Mavi. But they put a lot of sugar in it, so it's not totally fermented.
Right.
But, you know, it's there. Yeah. Wow, I have one song for you, ladies, I want to dedicate to the women out there. It's written by Edwin Cedeño, the late Edwin Cedeño. He's a percussionist. He wrote an album called Thyeno. It's a very hard CD to find now. And I have some of the songs because he was my teacher. He taught me some of these songs. And I'm going to play this song for you guys, all right? It's called Atabe. And for all the women out there who are listening, both Native, Taino, Indigenous, Afro-Indigenous, we're all one, right?
Right.
Now, let me see if I can find it. Selena, before I play this song, do you have any final comments before we leave?
I guess one more thing I just wanted to say is, Joali, thank you so much for being a guest on Thyeno Radio. Like, it was really good to have you, and you talked about so many things that I didn't even know. So I really learned a lot. And one more thing about your name, correct them every single time. I don't care if they get hurt, you correct them every single time they say your name wrong.
Oh, honey, I already wrote a speech about it and gave it in front of an audience in college about pronouncing my name correctly.
Yeah.
Girl, I do.
Nice.
That's the first thing people will realize about me is I will correct you. You will say my name with your whole mouth every single time. So I got you there. I got you there.
Good. Yeah, and also you are Indigenous. I know you know, thank you for sharing your experience as an Afro-Indigenous woman, because I know your experience is something others have gone through too, and it's important we talk about that as well. So I'm just thank you for sharing your story with us. Thank you for being here today. Thank you for your continuous fight for recognition for our people. You know, I just have a lot of thank yous to you and to Luis and to your, you know, to everybody out there who is an activist, who is advocating for us. So just again, thank you so much. And that's all really I have to say. Just really grateful you're on the show today.
Awesome. Good job. Thank you all. All right. So I found a song. You guys ready?
Yes.
All right. This is the Atabe song. Basically, it's saying that Atabe, you are our mother. We are your children. We honor you. And we're, you know, you're sacred. You are the mother. And it's in the Taino language.
Atabe ra gua, gua bibi gua, gua ra bibi. Atabe ra gua, gua bibi gua, gua ra baba. Atabe ra gua, gua bibi gua, gua kia na guti. Atabe ra gua, gua shui mako. Atabe ra gua, gua shui mako.
Thank all the listeners, the first annual Indigenous Caribbean Power Hour activism show. Thank you all for listening live, and all you future listeners that downloaded the show,